On July 13th, half an inch is all that separated a man from death. God's sovereignty, what lies ahead, and Donald Trump on this slice of fresh bread. Welcome to Fresh Bread, a podcast ministry of Grace Bible Church, Gainesville, with Pastor Brandon and Pastor Keith. Well, welcome to Fresh Bread. Thanks for clicking on Fresh Bread, podcast 70. Fresh Bread, we're bringing the truth of God's Word to a starving world. And in this podcast, we're going to talk about the historic moment that happened on July 13th. That was the assassination attempt on the former president, Donald Trump. We wanted to wait about 48 hours. They always say you should wait maybe 48 hours after an amazing event just so that all the facts are known. Otherwise, we probably would have started talking about this then, but we wanted to wait just for more facts to come out. So I'm Pastor Keith. He's Pastor Brandon. And again, we're going to jump into a little bit of politics, but this is a very major event. I think you said it in church that this was a historic moment.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's a historic moment in the sense of, you know, there are moments that happen in history that change the course of history. I think I see that at this point as that type of moment. I think of, you know, the things that have happened, you know, obviously 9/11 would be one that changed the course of history. Even, you know, things like the Challenger accident happening, you know, that's burnt into the persona or the consciousness of our country. Kennedy assassination would be one. I, you know, we didn't live through it, but I'm sure the Civil War and then having Lincoln assassinated right after that would have been one. So, you know, that there are these events that happened that changed the course of history. Now, it's interesting that this one wasn't an actual assassination, but it was an attempt at assassinating him. But, you know, I think that even the fact that they basically missed, he wasn't assassinated, has changed the whole tenor of the debate. Really, the whole, you know, how the country is dealing with, you know, this divide that we have. And so I think it's changed everything in that sense. Now, I don't know, you know, I'm still trying to work out in my own mind what that ultimately means in terms of like what's going to happen with the election. And, you know, I made some comments a few weeks ago that some of our listeners, you know, have discussed, you know, that I didn't think that either Trump or Biden would take office in January. And I haven't completely gone away from that, but I will say that, you know, had it not been for a bullet, you know, that a miss wide left using football terminology or maybe soccer terminology, but, you know, a miss, well, I guess it wasn't wide left. It would have been narrow left, but, but, you know, a small miss, you know, has changed everything. And, yeah. And so, you know, had that bullet, had he not tilted his head, you know, in a certain way, you know, that caused the bullet to miss, I mean, we'd be having a different conversation right now.
You'd be 50% right on your prediction. Because one of them would be gone, but
yes,
yeah, less than an inch, right?
Yes.
I just want to, before we jump in, there's so many things that we're going to talk about here with Donald Trump, but as we look at Donald Trump, I just want to run this by you, because there are people that, and we both know that Donald Trump is a narcissist to a point. There's something about the guy that he cannot let things go if it involves him. he's got to jump in and always include himself in everything. But here's the one thing about Donald Trump that I think I want to run this by you and tell me what you think. If anyone still thinks that he's just in for this because it's selfishness and he loves himself so much, think about this. Since 2016, they've tried to impeach him when he became president, take him out of office. They tried indicting him, putting him in prison, and now they've tried killing him, like we just talked about, 1 inch and he would have been dead. So why would a man who is a man like Donald Trump, he has so much money, he's so well off, why would he continue to go through this? Why would he continue to even want to be president when so many things are going against him?
Yeah, I see this as sort of a range on on the one side of that range, I see, you know, you talked about the narcissism and, you know, the fact that he is he's a man who is very proud and he won't let things go. And, you know, he wants his legacy to be a certain way. And I mean, it just seems like that he's willing to fight just about anybody and willing to, he doesn't mind picking a fight, you know, if it's something that he believes in and if it's something that he, that, you know, in terms of his own, how people see him. That's on one side. On the other side, you know, there's the Trump that seems to really love the country and really wants the country to do well. And so it's just I don't know if, you know, in the range of that, you know, on one side or the other, I don't know where he actually stands. I think it is a strange mix of the two that, you know, he does have. You mentioned before we came on the air or before we started recording, you mentioned, you know, how, you know, some of the things that you see behind the scenes where people, where he cares for people. I saw a video one time where he's walking through a hotel lobby, might have even been Trump Tower in New York, and he's walking through and these two kids, two little boys, I think it was, were trying to get his attention, and he walks past and then he realizes that they're trying to get his attention, and he like comes back to them and he spends time with them and he gets down and talks to them. And so, you know, it's just a video. It's kind of a touching video that a guy in his position, you know, is willing to take the time. I mean, there's videos of him, you know, with these, you know, Marines on, you know, Marine One or Air Force with Air Force One. I can't remember which one, but which uniformed soldier it was. But you know, the wind blows the hat off and you know, Trump reaches down and grabs the hat and is really awkward in putting the hat back on. But there's just, it shows that there's a willingness to care for people, especially people that are not as seen, you know, like he didn't have to act that way. He could have just, you know, proudly walked by them and never, you know, never acknowledged them, you know, whether it's the soldier or whether it's the children. And so there's just an odd mix with him of, you know, that, you know, where there is this narcissistic side to him that doesn't want to, that's, you know, doesn't want anybody to impugn upon his reputation, that sort of thing. And he's really, he seems to be concerned about that. You know, even arguing with Biden over who's got a better golf game. I mean, anybody that follows it knows that Trump could beat Biden like a drum in golf. And so why even engage in that conversation yet? That's where they are, you know, that's where he's at. But on the other side, he has this odd desire that seems to really care for the country and seems to really care for people, you know, actual people. Like, you know, he visits people and it's not just a photo opportunity with him, or it doesn't, at least on the outside looking in, it doesn't seem like that. So I don't know the answer to that. I do know that there are dangers there. Because, you know, he is revered by a lot of people. Like he's seen, there's almost a little bit of a messianic tone to him, and, you know, especially with certain people, and you know, that's there's always danger there, even if he means well. When you have a sinner who is showered with that type of praise and with that type of language, you know, the danger is he begins to believe the press, you know, he begins to believe those things and act on them. And so, you know, we've seen some things lately, especially since the attempted assassination, some things that, you know, like he's at the RNC and he's there every day, you know, I've ever seen a candidate who, you know, a nominee who has attended every day of the, you know, publicly out in, you know, in the open, attended every day of a convention. And so, you know, there are some things that give me pause in terms of how people are responding to him. And it is a little bit of an enigma to me in terms of his own personality and motivations, why he would do what he does.
Yeah, to me, I think this is the key to unlocking it, is if you look at Trump and you say he's in it because he loves his country and he's so determined to not let these progressive weirdos take over, that he is just so locked into that, that he wants to go there and change it. That's one side. The other side is that he's such a narcissist, egomaniac that he doesn't care what happens to him. He just is all in it for himself. So
you're saying that that's the two.
There are the two sides, the two people sides. That love him and the people that hate him.
Yes.
And that's why he's very divisive.
Divisive, yes.
But that, I think that's a part of his, who he is. He's probably the most unusual, unique guy that's ever run for president and ever won that we've ever seen, because he's just so polarizing.
Yes. I mean, Reagan, he does remind me of Reagan in some ways. I mean, in many ways he doesn't. I mean, Reagan was very well spoken, and you know, Reagan had a sense of humor that, you know, he always had the right thing to say given the situation, always seemed to have it right on the tip of his tongue, never seemed to struggle that way. You know, Trump is not that. But then, you know, Reagan was a flawed man. You know, if you think about back in the late 70s, you know, where he kind of began, well, 60s and 70s, where he began to be talked about as being a president, and, you know, where he began to rise, obviously elected in 1980. But you know, he was a flawed man for that time frame as well. I mean, he was a guy that had a previous marriage, and, you know, he was an actor. He had been, you know, head of the Screen Actors Guild. And so he had some baggage back, you know, that, you know, he wasn't the typical politician and had come out of the, you know, acting. And so we have some parallels with, you know, with Trump. I mean, Trump had, I think it was the number one television show in the nation. And so he was a businessman first, and then obviously an actor second, and, you know, successful, very successful at both. And so, but he also was a man who was known to be a ladies' man, and you know, a guy that morally speaking has some issues. And so, you know, there are some parallels between Reagan and Trump, and now you have an even greater parallel that, you know, early in Reagan's presidency, they tried to assassinate, you know, Hinckley tried to assassinate him, and I think Hinckley did act alone in that situation. But, you know, now you've got Trump that's almost assassinated, and so there's something about surviving an assassination attempt that really causes people to really and really like you. I mean, it's an odd thing that happens. And I think with Trump and already having that almost cult-like following, that's just solidified his following and caused a lot of people to really, even people who were against him, to think, oh, well, this guy's, you know, he's the real deal.
Yeah, let's break this down, because it's interesting when we look at what happened on July 13th. There are some people that say that this was all staged, that Donald Trump had this staged. And when you look at it, it almost seems like a movie because it was such a perfect response by him when he gets up and he puts his fist in the air and he yells, fight, fight. I mean, it's like I got goosebumps when I saw that, and it almost brought tears to my eyes. Like, I just like, I want to vote for this guy. I mean, if you compare him to Biden, you've got a guy who doesn't know where he is and a guy who just got shot and gets up and yells fight. Trump is just, you can just see the leader in him. But let me just run this by you. Could this have been faked by Donald Trump? Was this staged?
You know, it's funny because my wife asked me the same thing, and I don't see it. Like, I mean, I think if what I told her was, if they were going to stage it, the bullet wouldn't have come as close as it did. Like, I mean, like,
exactly,
the gunman would have missed by a foot. I mean, and I don't think they would have had someone get killed in the background. Mm-hmm. You know, I think they would have tried to avoid that. You know, you think about, I mean, that's my thoughts. I mean, I obviously could be wrong. I don't see it. I mean, with the narcissism that we've discussed, I mean, is that something that somebody who's a narcissistic person could do? Yeah, but I don't. But it doesn't have, to me, it doesn't have the hallmarks of a fake in that way. Like it's something that, I mean, I just think they would have done it differently. If nothing else, he wouldn't have hit him in the ear. Like, that would have been, I don't see that happening in a million years. He would have shot over him. He would have shot, you know, 2 feet to the side, or, you know, to the side of him. He would have, you know, something. But I don't see him. I just don't see him. being willing to stand in and be that close a shot.
Yeah, and how would you pay somebody to, like that family, the fireman who risked his life to protect his family, how would you pay them to say, okay, we're going to have you be killed? And also the shooter himself, how would you arrange that, that you're, we're going to kill you as well and stage all of that? It doesn't make sense.
Well, I don't know that they would have had to know. Like, you could have been a very, I mean, I think you
could
probably.
That would be a horrible
yeah.
staging.
Well, the problem is the Secret Service would have had to have been in on it as well. Like, I mean, because they're the ones who made the decision to leave the roof open. You know, the roof that he ended up, the shooter ended up being on, or at least the one that they're saying did the shooting. And so that roof would have had to been left open, and the Secret Service would have had to been in on that. And I don't see a Biden-led Secret Service being willing to say, oh, yeah, we'll just leave that open. Now, you could say that roof, I mean, I guess the roof was supposed to be covered by Leo, the law enforcement, you know, local law enforcement, and you could say maybe they were involved. But I don't see it. I don't see it being faked by the Trump side.
No, I think you got to rule that out. There's too many things that happen. It couldn't have been staged. It couldn't have been fake. So then we asked a question, was this a lone gunman who just got lucky, or almost got lucky, we should say?
Well, I mean, you're getting into the Lee Harvey Oswald
right.
question now. I mean, like, did Lee Harvey Oswald act alone? And have we talked about that on the podcast?
We haven't talked about it on the air, but we've talked about it off air, where you and I differ on this. But
yeah, I used to be a guy that said Oswald acted alone.
I'm leaning more towards the CIA maybe knew it but allowed it.
So you think that he was a CIA operative?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I think Oswald was a goofball.
Yeah.
But I think he had the means and I don't think there was another shooter in the grassy knoll. Some people believe that.
Sure.
I think he acted alone, but I'm willing to give you this, that maybe they knew about it. They were aware that this could happen, and they allowed it to happen.
Yeah, I just am not. I don't trust LBJ.
Yes.
He's dead, and I still don't trust him. And so, yeah, and I know that LBJ was going to be, they were going to run a big story on him the next day, and he would have been out of politics most likely with what was going to come out. And they decided after the Kennedy assassination, they decided not to run that story, because it would have been really tough on the country to lose the president and then the vice president be politically, like, taken down. And so they decided not to run the story. And so I'm not 100% that it was more than Oswald, because I still, you know, I wouldn't necessarily be blown away if it were just Oswald, but I think there was more to it. There was much more to it than what we found, you know, and especially when you have the Warren Commission and the people that were involved in that, and it just, you know, they weren't really trying to get to the truth. That they didn't have politically, they didn't have any reason to at that point. And so I just don't think that, you know, that it was, I don't think Oswald acted alone. And so
getting back to Donald Trump, right.
Did this kid act alone?
A 20-year-old kid. He didn't make his shooting club in high school, because he wasn't a good enough shot.
Okay.
Was this...
Well, he did miss, so there is that.
Right. Was this an almost got lucky, or was it a let it happen moment again?
Well, now you're getting into the whole Secret Service and what's happening with the Secret Service. And
what was going on that day? Why was it so horribly...
Yeah, I mean, there was decisions they made, you know, not to cover the top of that building. I mean,
call it the Pac-Man
perimeter.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the perimeter is cut out. Like, it's when you see it, it's actually that building would actually be in the perimeter, that security perimeter. And really, if you think about it, even outside of that perimeter, I mean, you up to, you know, 800 yards, you would need to be careful to make sure that there's nobody that has the ability to have a clear shot, you know. And so that perimeter was only a couple of hundred yards. And then outside of that, there was a building, I think we just saw, there was a building that's 500 yards away that wasn't covered. And so...
And there was a water tower another 600 yards.
Yeah, there's a water tower that was actually behind his... where he was shooting. And so, you know, they say that some witnesses say that there was a shooter on top of the water tower. And so, yeah, I mean, there's so many there to me, there's a lot of parallels to what happened with Kennedy. And to me, there it's probably I think based on what I know at this point, it seems almost probable that there was more involved than just this kid.
Yeah, how does a 20-year-old kid also, they found his phone, but everything was wiped. Like, how does a 20-year-old kid do that? Or do they know how to do that? I don't know how to do that.
Oh, so they got into it and it was wiped?
Yeah, everything. I didn't know there that. Was no, he's. They say he was a registered Republican. He had given like $15 to Biden's campaign, but there was no, like, there was no, usually when
there's
you.
There's no footprint. No, yeah, no usually. No social media footprint. There's nothing.
Exactly. That, when someone's going to do this, usually there's some kind of trail.
So some sort of manifesto even that says, this is why I did it. This
everything is wiped. Nothing.
Yeah, because they want some sort of fame after the fact.
Yeah.
You know, that they. You know, they're Lee Harvey Oswald. They're they're Hinckley.
By the way, I think that's why Oswald did it mainly was because he wanted this. He wanted his moment in the sun. He thought he could. Yeah. But then anyway, so back to Trump.
Yeah. So why did Jack Ruby kill him?
Because Ruby was so angry that somebody took Kennedy.
Yeah, that's
out.
That's the media story for sure.
It is. I'll give you this. It's such a weird. Kennedy assassination is so weird that Oswald, before they even can question him barely, someone takes him out, which makes it look like
somebody who has
goodness.
Terminal cancer.
Yeah.
And is part of the mob world.
And it never should have happened because it happened in a police station. How does that happen?
Yeah, in the basement of a police.
Exactly. So the floodgates of conspiracy theories were wide open. But sometimes this most simplest answer is the right answer.
Yeah, for sure. We have at least one listener who would definitely subscribe to Occam's razor, you know, that the simplest answer is probably the most likely one.
Exactly. And Ruby had been down in the police station. They knew him. He had been around before, so he had access. Anyway, we're getting...
Well, okay, no, well
we'll
it's,
do a
but
show on that sometime.
Yeah, we definitely want to, but we need to.
Because it's fascinating.
It is a fascinating story.
Don't believe
story.
Your government, right?
It is a fascinating story, but on the other hand, there are parallels to what, you know, what we see here in this story with Trump's this attempted assassination, but it's even, you know, in terms of what happened. I mean, the fact that, I mean, back then, you know, the president, you know, President Kennedy, they chastised him, if I remember right, that, you know, about an open, you know, coming in an open limousine, and they
exactly.
I think that was probably the last time that they did open limousines in that type of situation. And so there were some things there that, you know, that it was a different time.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
So, but the problem is that this is a different time, and we do know that, you know, we do have all of this information in terms of militarily and, you know, from a security standpoint of how to secure a location, right? And nothing was done in the way it should have been done. And, you know, you have this building that's open, you have this other building 800 yards away, they have this water tower, none of this stuff is secured. And so you have all these opportunities for the shot that could have killed who was the former president, but it could be the future president of the United States. And so, you know, here we are. And then you throw in there the Secret Service and, you know, the head of the Secret Service, you know, the DEI stuff that's going on in that, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And you have this team of just basically riffraff. I'm sure there's some good people in, you know, that were on that team. You know, good folks in terms of what they're trying to do, but you have some people that obviously shouldn't be on that team in terms of that security detail. And so, I mean, obviously shouldn't have been. And, you know, that now you get into the whole, you know, women and how that should have been dealt with. And
do you want to touch on that for a moment?
Yeah, we can touch on that. What do you have a question about it?
Well, I was going to say, Secret Service Director, her name is Kimberly Cheeto, who should be fired. She wants 30% women Secret Service by 2030, 20-something. But and where we both agree that it should be the best men or women in that.
Well, I would say personally, it should be the best men, but. I mean, because I think that's men are more suited for that type of environment.
I think the closeness of protecting the president, yes, men. I think women, I think you can use them for observation
support
and things
roles.
Like that. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, they're detail oriented, you know, in planning, that sort of thing. Yeah, absolutely. this isn't an anti-women. I mean, obviously, if you hear me preach, if you hear me speak, you know that I'm not anti-women. But I am. I don't think that in the line of fire that we should. Women are just not generally made up for that. There's an emotional makeup that it, you know, that they don't have that men have, and I don't think that women should be on that. Now, even if you said, okay, yeah, we're going to allow women on the Secret Service and we're going to allow women in a security detail like that, okay, I mean, that's the world we live in. I realize I'm a fuddy-duddy and I'm old, but you would still want the best of the best, mm-hmm. right? I mean, so you would still want, tactically, you would want people who are going to be the best. And so that's not what happened here in this detail.
Well, when we look at what happened with the microphone was on when all this happened, when Trump went down, the woman, and I give this woman credit, the woman that rushed the stage to help him. And the sad thing is she was too short. She only came up to Donald Trump's chest, which doesn't really help when you're trying to shield the president. But the first thing she said, what do we do? What do we do? And the two men, that were there said, we get him out of here. And that's when he asked for his shoes. And that's when he gave the, you know, fight thing. But she did a good job. But here's the thing is that there's something called fractional wrongness. I don't know if you ever heard that word, where there's no way that this many things can go wrong at the same time, which leads us to believe that there is something more going on. Like you said, there's some shenanigans happening that maybe this was all planned. And when we look at what happened on the 13th, is Jill Biden was also in Pennsylvania. So there's people talking about she needed Secret Service. Trump needed Secret Service. So did Trump get the B team or the C team? Was that a factor? Because there were some women there that didn't know how to holster their gun, and one had a ponytail, which you shouldn't have if you're doing security detail, because that's an object where someone can grab and use as a weapon. And
yeah, that poor girl that couldn't holster a gun certainly became a meme, didn't she?
Yeah, and I feel bad. I mean, again, to just defend her a little bit, that there's a lot of adrenaline going on, yes. And there's a lot of chaos. But
well, that's why
still,
that's why you do that so much that it's like you don't have to think about
right,
it.
Exactly. And I think this might have been her first assassination attempt. So
well, it probably was.
So yeah, anyway, but anyway, like I agree with what you're saying. I think, and I'm talk about a fuddy-duddy. I don't even think women should be in combat, like actually.
No, I don't either.
Combat, which is like makes us dinosaurs. But I don't mind women in the military. There's, like I said, there's many things women can do. Like you said, they're detail-oriented. They can do so much better. But as far as, you know, fighting on the front lines, no.
Yeah, and that's similar to this. I mean, this is frontline kind of stuff. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm not a big fan of it. And personally, but even if you say, yeah, it's okay, even if we as a nation say it's okay, which we have, then even with that, it's still in that situation still should be like the best of the best. That, and that's not what we saw, you know, and it's interesting because you watch, if you watched Trump's first night coming into the RNC, they had his detail with him there and he had like six or seven goons with him. Like, I mean, they were talking a completely different look when it came to his security detail. You know, the few guys that were around him. I mean, just completely different situation. Yeah. And
well, as I mean, from going forward now, this should not happen again, right?
Well, I would hope not, but I'm not convinced. You know, I said, like I said earlier,
your prediction, which was in April, right?
What's that?
You made the prediction in April that Trump nor Biden will take the office.
Yeah, we'll take office in January. January. I didn't say that neither
one
of them would be elected.
I was going to say, do you want to change that now?
Well, yeah. Well, I think that, okay, when you look at the momentum that Trump has right now.
But we're still 5 months out.
At this point, that bullet may have changed everything. That Trump may have enough momentum at this point to pull through and actually win and take office. You know, so the question you asked, the original question was, will they let him take office? Because in my mind, whether I said it or not, when I made that prediction, what I was thinking is that they would take Trump out,
yeah,
and not let him take office. Half an inch away from being correct.
Yeah.
And it's still a question mark whether that they'll actually, like the people who want him gone. I mean, there's a lot of vitriol. And I know that this whole situation has kind of taken the air out of that a little bit, you know, that cooler voices are, you know, saying, hey, we need to be more unified and we may have differences politically, but we all want the same thing. And there's, you know, even Trump is saying those kind of things. And so there's a lot of, you know, it's been kind of cooled down with this, right? That this has happened. And so hopefully that'll carry through to November and into January. And, you know, I think if, you know, in a fair fight right now, I think that there's no way that Biden can win. Like there's no, he cannot beat Trump. You know, that's right now. Now that may change. A lot of things can change in 30 days. So,
yeah.
And we've got 5 months or whatever you said it is. So,
well, that's what I mean. Is this going to peak too soon? Because there's still, well, there's no bump in the poll yet, but that's coming. Because if you look at the betting odds, it's flipped now where Trump is now 70% money on him, which will lead to the polls will show that, I think, by this weekend.
Sure.
So, and my theory is that Biden will not run, that Michelle Obama will, or somebody will step in.
Yeah, I've always thought it would be Michelle Obama.
I think she's the one that can probably beat Trump.
And I, you know, there's a lot of people don't think because she said several times that she doesn't want to do it, you know, that she would rather, you know, go off into the sunset and not do that. But I don't know, that very well could be a scheme to heighten, you know, the desire for her to do it. And once she does step in, then all of a sudden that's where the momentum would shift to her and to the Democratic side. And so, especially if she comes in and moves more toward the middle, at least in rhetoric, like, especially if she comes in, I mean, like if I were the Democrats right now, what I would be doing is I'd be saying, okay, we need to stop with this whole left wing, you know, all these things that we're doing that's ticking off the middle and the right. We need to move more toward the middle. You know, we need to, in terms of our rhetoric, and we need to have somebody that's going to be popular. Well, if you take a Michelle Obama and you move her more toward the middle in terms of the rhetoric, I mean, I'm not saying that they would change idealistically, but in terms of the rhetoric, you know, all of a sudden, you know, she becomes a viable candidate and the whole thing changes. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I've told you this many times. I'm not a prophet, not the son of one. But yeah, I mean, there's certainly, it's an interesting time to live. It's an interesting time to live.
Certainly Biden could still run. I'm not saying this is money in the bank, but we'll see what happens. But it is interesting. I just heard Van Jones came out on CNN the other day when he said that J.D. Vance is a nationalist. So already they're comparing him the same thing they did with Trump. He just thinks that J.D. Vance is very dangerous for the country, that his ideology is very dangerous.
Yes.
I don't see it.
I'm not agreeing necessarily.
I see a hillbilly guy who came up and...
Well, I think it's interesting because my take on that, I've watched highlights of the RNC. I haven't watched it live, but I've watched highlights of the RNC and it's actually nostalgic to me because there's a patriotism that's there that I haven't really experienced and seen for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. I mean, it's been a long time since I've witnessed the type of patriotism, you know, where America first kind of attitude, in a long time, you know, that there's a nationalist attitude that is palpable. And so I think it's interesting that he chose J.D. Vance because, you know, it's funny because, again, one of our listeners asked who I thought they were going to, like...
And you said it before he...
Like a minute before he actually posted on Truth Social that he had picked J.D. Vance, he asked me, and I just popped back J.D. Vance, and then a minute later, we found out that it was J.D. Vance. And I promise I didn't know, you know, other than that he was a possibility. J.D. Vance is an interesting pick, but he actually, like, he's playing to his base. A lot of times these guys will... Like a presidential candidate will figure out what his weakness is. Like I'm weak with women, you know. Like women hate me or whatever, or don't like me, and I want to pick up some women vote, so I'll pick a woman VP. Or I, you know, struggle with black vote, and I need black vote, and so I'm going to pick an African American VP. I mean, that kind of thought process. And so for him to pick J.D. Vance is like that's his base. I mean, that's J.D. Yeah. Vance is the kind of guy that's going to appeal to people who already are drawn to Trump. And so it's an interesting pick in that way. And I wonder if that, you know, even, you know, I, even if that was completely a done deal, even when that attempted assassination happened, you know, if that sealed the deal, like, we're going to go all in on, you know, the patriotism and this idea of fight, fight, fight. J.D. Vance pick, you know, sort of that pick fits that, you know, J.D. Vance is a guy that's kind of fought from the beginning. You know, he's had to fight his way to, you know, to where he's at, and hillbilly from West Virginia kind of guy. And, you know,
went to Yale.
Yeah.
Became a lawyer.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be it's an interesting pick. It's an interesting situation. And in some ways there's a deeper divide today than there was, you know, before that bullet flew. And it's just that it's just that the rhetoric seems to be not as much at this point.
It's funny because Vance kind of fits, because Vance hated Trump in 2016. Like, he was anti-Trump. Yes. But now he
was a never-Trumper.
Yeah. But that's what I mean. I think a lot of people in the country are re-looking at Trump now because of this, and just the way he handled everything after he was shot. I think it shocked people, and it said, wow, I think I can vote for this guy.
It's interesting you bring that up, because the whole Secret Service and the ineptitude of the Secret Service at that, you know, with that detail, not that they're inept overall. I think they're still a great organization overall, even though there's problems with DEI and some of the stuff that's happening. I still think there's great people that are in that organization. But it's interesting that the ineptitude of that specific detail allowed for Trump to have that iconic moment of raising the fist, saying fight, fight, fight. Because if those guys had been, you know, if you think back to Reagan, I don't know what the timing was, but Reagan, within 30 seconds, when Hinckley shot Reagan, they didn't even know Reagan was shot, mm-hmm. and until he was on the road going toward the hospital.
He was coughing up blood, and that's when they thought they broke his rib by pushing him in the car.
Like, but it was, I mean, 30 seconds probably. He was on the road, already on the
road. He was actually heading to the limo when Hinckley shot
him. He was. I agree that. Yeah. But the difference in reaction, right. And that's what I'm getting at. Yeah. Like they had him in that limo,
yep.
and down the road, like, you know, you compare that to where Trump was, and the fact that Trump had time to, you know, ask for his shoes and the fact that
who was in control? The Secret Service or Trump? You can see they were trying to get him out, but he said, wait a minute, let me get my shoes. And then he stopped and did the fist pump.
Yeah, that never should have happened. That's my point. Is that?
But the thing is that it shows Trump's leadership, right? Well, it shows him as a...
Well,
he was trying. Was he trying to comfort his supporters, or was he just... Was he angry that this happened? Or, like, that's what's going through his mind, right?
I don't know. Yeah, that's hard to know. I mean,
that's why people say it was staged, because it was like a movie.
Yeah.
It was so perfect.
Yeah, it's hard to know. I don't think it was. I mean, I don't think it was staged.
I don't either. But that's what I'm saying. That's why Trump is an amazing guy.
Yeah.
Biden would never have done that. But Biden would have just ducked, and they would have got him out of there.
Yeah. I'm not. I appreciate Trump for who he is, and for the cultural moment that we're in. I'm not going to make him any more of a hero than he needs to be. I just think that.
Did it make you want to vote for him more, though?
No.
Really? Because it kind of made me say, I'm voting for him now. I mean, this guy's he's amazing.
It's funny you mentioned this whole thing being like a movie, because I'm kind of watching the whole everything unfold. And I feel like it's funny because this is going to be kind of weird probably sounding, but I sort of live outside of everything and watch it. And I watch it like it's a movie. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out what's going to happen next.
What's the ending?
Yeah, what's going to happen next and how this is all going to unfold. It's funny because I see, this has barely talked about theology in this segment.
Yeah, I want to get to that part.
Well, we need to talk about theology.
The sovereignty of God.
Yes, we need to talk about the sovereignty of God and all this. And this is probably a good segue.
Okay.
I'm sort of watching all of this as I'm watching history unfold, and I'm watching it sort of I'm sitting in a theater and I'm watching this scene and the next scene. You know, there's a scene of Trump doing what he did, and there's a scene of Biden failing at the debate, you know, and there's all these things that are unfolding, and there's things that we don't, you know, that we don't see that are going on behind the scenes, and there's subtleties that are happening and all that. And I'm kind of watching all of it. And I'm not a guy that's going at this point in my life. I'm not a guy that's looking at Trump or Biden and seeing any sort of savior, like he's going to bring back the life the way it was kind of idea. You know, I told you, you know, you and I had this discussion a few weeks ago that we talked about, like, if you know, we talked about life and where things are going. And at the time you were pretty pessimistic about things. And I said, you know, but something could happen. And we'd be, you know, another 100 years away before, you know, the Lord returns. And, you know, that in God's sovereignty, there may be a reprieve and there may be repentance. Our nation may repent. And, you know, it's interesting because we're at a point where maybe that's something that could happen. You know, that we may have a reprieve. It may be 4 years if we have Trump. It may be that this, you know, ushers in a 100-year time period where we enjoy, you know, relative peace. I don't know. I'm still pessimistic. I mean, like we said in that last show, but I'm watching all of this and I'm just watching it kind of as a participant, not as a participant, but as sort of part of the audience. And I'm watching and I'm waiting to see what the Lord does. It's interesting because I do see this going back to, this is again a segue to the sovereignty of God and theology and understanding these things that are happening. I do think that, I mean, we have to see God's sovereignty in this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people, you know, you see these memes or you see this stuff, and, you know, a couple of things that I saw is, you know, like people say that God changed the trajectory of the bullet and, you know, or, you know, caused Trump to tilt his head a certain way or whatever. You know, that's all in the providence of God, mm-hmm. right? I mean, in the providence of God, the bullet missed. And, you know, for whatever reason, whether it was a puff of wind or whether it was a head tilt or whether it was the guy just can't shoot, you know, because he wasn't part of the gun club or whatever, for whatever reason, you know, the bullet didn't hit. And, you know, and you have to see that in God's providence that it didn't. And he has a purpose for that. We don't know what that purpose is at this point. We don't know whether it's to usher in, you know, a period of peace, a 4-year reprieve or a longer time. We don't know if this is going to cause those on the other side, the ones that are anti-Trump, anti-democracy, anti-republic, is it going to cause them to stand up and fight an even greater fight, you know, in terms of trying to reset the world that we live in? You know, that whole great reset thing in 2030 is still out there looming, and people wanting to see, you know, that a sovereign United States isn't what they want. They want one world government. They want unity in that way. They want peace through the gun. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a, I do know. I do know, as we sit here, I do know who wins.
Yeah.
Right? I do know the end. And I do know what, I mean, I don't know every detail and how it's all going to come about, but I do know things that the Bible says is going to happen, and I do believe they're going to happen, and I'm still convinced that they're going to happen. And it's just so interesting, Keith, that you want to talk about birth pains.
Yeah.
You know, we're definitely seeing things that, you know, convulsions that are happening, you know, more quickly, like the things that are happening now are happening at a pace that in my lifetime I haven't seen. Like, it's, you know, I know your lifetime would be the same thing, where, you know, things that are happening, you know, on almost a daily basis that are unprecedented and, you know, just completely, I just feel almost disembodied from it. Like it's just stuff that I'm watching and I'm seeing it, and Yeah. So you asked whether I'm more likely to vote for Trump. No, I'm not more likely to vote for Trump. I'm not going to say publicly who I'm going to vote for. I just don't think that that matters. But I mean, I think people could figure it out if they, you know me. But I don't. I'm not more or less likely to one way or the other.
Yeah, it's amazing. This will be my third time voting for Trump. I mean, that's amazing. We think I've never voted for anyone three times.
Well,
I wasn't around for Roosevelt. I'm not that old.
I know. Well, neither was I.
But let me ask you this question real quick as we start to wrap this up. What would have happened, do you think, if Trump hadn't turned his head, if he had died? What would our country look like today?
Well, in the sovereignty of God, I do believe that we would be closer to the abyss of a war, you know, some sort of conflict. Whether that conflict turned to a bloody conflict like the Civil War, I don't know, but I do think that we would be closer to that. Mm. You know, it's funny because, you know, anytime there's been a conflict like the Revolutionary War, where we declared independence from Britain, or the Civil War, you know, anytime there's been a bloody conflict, there's definitely a buildup to that. You know, even World War II, there was a buildup to that. Mm-hmm. You know, World War I, there was a buildup to that. And sometimes assassinations mm-hmm. are part of that buildup, you know, where something happens to one side or the other that way. You know, will we continue to build up to something, some sort of conflict? I don't know. I don't know that answer. I just don't know. I do know this, that I don't think that America, you know, when you look at prophecy, I don't see America being a substantial part of, you know, the end times prophecy and what's going to happen. I think at some point America is going to be sidelined. Whether we're sidelined in whatever sense it is, whether it's civil war that causes, divides us, or whether it's the great reset that makes us, you know, that takes our sovereignty away. I don't know. I mean, I don't know the answer to that, but I mean, or a combination where you end up in a more of a civil war type situation where, you know, where then you're weakened. I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is, but I do know that God's sovereignty, that he will bring everything to pass that he says will come to pass. So I do know that.
Yeah. I think we implode from the inside. That's what I look at. That's why we're not mentioned in Revelation.
Yeah. Well, that seems to be the case.
I think we're heading down that road.
I mean, I think Khrushchev said that back in the 60s, yeah. Didn't he? You know, he said that we would rot from the inside out. And so, I mean, that seems to be what's happening, what's coming true, and seems to be what's happening in our country. And, you know, I just don't know where this whole Trump thing, you know, if they'd have killed Trump, you know, then I think it would have descended further. The fact that they didn't kill Trump, and all of a sudden there's this, you know, surge of patriotism, and, you know, does that give us a few more years? I don't know. I can't. Like I say, yeah. He still hasn't taken office yet. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot that can happen between yep. now and November.
Exactly. Let me close with this. Let me ask you this. We talk about uniting the country. How do we unite a country that is so different now? Let me just share this with you. These are four things that we as Americans have always held tight as we've gone into elections and wars or anything like that. And that is, number one, here's the number one thing that we all share. I don't know if we still do, but that's why I'm asking you. Number one, we are all Americans. That was something we cherished. Well, can we make that statement today?
No, I don't think we can.
Because of immigration and...
Well, we've always been a country of immigrants, and it's interesting because I think somebody made the point the other day that some of the, you know, immigrants would still be the most patriotic people because they know what they came from.
Like, but the way they're doing it now, would they still be?
Yeah, I think that it's certainly weakening us and weakening the patriotic spirit that we would have in our country. And that's why it's interesting watching the RNC, because it's so patriotic, and it reminds me. It takes me back to a time when I remember being that the country, that everybody, even though we may have had different ideologies, we all had an America that we believed in. You know, that we believed that America stood for something greater than, you know, that together we were greater than the parts. And so that we've lost that, you know, over the past 30 years, we've definitely lost that. I would say since Reagan, Reagan sort of united us, and there was the, triumph of the Cold War and that sort of thing. But we've seen that, especially under Obama. Obama was so divisive.
Yeah.
He had a promise of being unifying, he was going to be a unifying president, but he was so divisive in some of the things that he did. And so, I that's been, for me, the nostalgia of patriotism has been kind of the most interesting part for me, since the assassination attempt, now with the RNC going on. Can we capture that again? Patriotic spirit. I just think that there's so many people have such a divergent vision for our nation. There's the people on the left that are, there's such a divergent, there's this idea of who we are and at the inclusion rhetoric that's out there, that makes us seem like, people on our side that would be more, what God would say, marriage between a man and a woman, that it's homosexuality is a sin. And, there's certain things that we say that, the family unit is so important and, that we should have strong families. But on the other side, they're fighting against those things, or at least the vision that I would have biblically, of those things for the country. And I have a difficult time seeing how we can, we can bring that back together. And there can be a unified vision for the country, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the one. We are all Americans. Number two was, we all love freedom. Is that true today?
I don't think that a lot of people understand what true freedom is.
Yeah.
I think that true freedom, obviously freedom to live a life that you choose, that I can say what I need to say. I don't need to be fearful of the things that I say, that I can say, whether people like it or not, they, accept my right to say it, that I have the right to protect my family, by force if necessary. I think that a lot of people want to take those things away, and I don't think they realize, the responsibility that they have for freedom and the responsibility they have to protect it. And they're willing to give it away for safety, for peace. And there can't be true peace. There can't be true safety unless there's freedom, ultimately.
So we can't unite that we're all Americans. We can't unite that we all have freedom. How about this one? We all love our fellow countrymen. Do you see that in our country?
Well, no. I mean, I see divisiveness at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, there's certainly factions, and within those factions, that people have care. I assume they care for one another.
I didn't see a lot of love with Black Lives Matters.
No,
a lot
no
of riots and
no
burning and
no. It's going to be very difficult. Outside of a common vision for our country, it's going to be very difficult to have a I truly care for my. I mean, I as a Christian, I'm called to love my enemies, right? It doesn't matter, and that's a delicate balance of standing for what's right and loving your enemies, and standing against the evil that they perpetrate, but at the same time, having a love for them. Yeah, I have a difficult time seeing that happen long term, for our nation.
Yeah, how about we all love our history?
Well, I think there's a divergent view of our history, and and obviously there were things that it's a sinful man is going to do a lot of sinful things, and so it doesn't matter what your view of history is in terms of American history, but I think it's going to be difficult for us all to have the same vision. I think that I think Pandora's box has been opened in that sense, and there's a lot of things that have been taught, and it's going to be very difficult for us to land on a common understanding of our history and that we can really rally around, that we can really rally around.
It is going to be hard to unite.
Yes.
Because
yes.
We, like you said, we are very fractioned.
Yes. I mean, I think there's going to have to be repentance.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know long term how what that's going to look like.
What I would like to do is after the Democratic convention is let's do another podcast on politics, because I think we need to kind of look at the Republican platform, how it has shifted more towards the center. They took out some language that.
Yeah, that's interesting. We can have that conversation. You know, Trump would say, like on the issue of abortion, that he's pushing it to the states.
Yep.
And so that's why he's, you know, that some of the historical language that's been on the platform has now been removed. I'm not a big fan of that, but you know, but again, I see history, and I see as history unfolds, I see it as sort of watching watching this whole thing unfold in front of me, and so we'll see what, you know, what the Lord has in store.
But, yeah, and they took out the marriage between a man and a woman. Mm-hmm. They took that out of the platform. I mean, it's more of a centrist.
Sure.
But again, like you say, I think because of the Democrat Party has moved so far to the left, the Republican Party has had to slide towards the left just to be in the middle.
Yeah, well, there's an opportunity. I mean, let's face it, politically, there's an opportunity to capture the middle, because the left has gone so far left that they've left the middle.
Mm.
They've left the middle wide open. And so, you know, Trump becoming a centrist actually makes a lot of sense politically. Now, whether or not it's something that we can live with as Christians, I mean, obviously, I think God is on his throne. So I don't care if it's Trump or if it's Obama or if it's Biden or if it's, you know, Michelle or who's the president. It doesn't matter to me. I mean, in terms of what God is doing, yes, I need to vote my conscience. Yes, I need to pray. I need to be involved in at least some level of understanding. I need to fight for what's right, you know, and what's right and good. Yes, I need to. Yeah, yes. But at the end of the day, God is on his throne, and I believe that his kingdom is coming, and I need to be preparing for that. So.
Yes, exactly. And we need to be praying for our leaders, who, no matter who it is.
Yes.
Even at Joe Biden.
Yes. When's the last time you prayed for Joe Biden?
You've been listening to Fresh Bread, a podcast ministry of Grace Bible Church Gainesville. For more information, go to gracegainesville.org. And thanks for listening.